Okay. And please remember that you can always sit close to the front. The monks, we do take showers every day. So the closer you are, the closer you get to the power. But anyway, never mind. So I know that the most favorite spots in this hall are always close to the door. Just in case you don't like the talk, you can always slip out. And that's just like, I'm not sure I said this recently, someone asked me why it was that people don't wear shoes in Buddhist temples. And the answer to that is because it means if I tell a bad joke, you can't throw your shoes at me. You have to leave them outside before you come in. There's always something very practical about Buddhism. But this evening, I wanted to answer a question which somebody emailed to me. Can you please give a talk on why people do bad things? And it's a talk which I've avoided because, oh, I like thinking about why people do good things and the good things to inspire everybody. But it does happen. It's always happened to you many times. People have done bad things. And yeah, it's one thing to talk about forgiving the person. And of course, that's an important part of Buddhism. And I talk a lot about sort of how to deal with what happens when people do a bad thing to you. But still, people always want to know why. Why is it that those things happen? Why did a person do such a thing? And it's an important question, because once we understand why people do those sorts of things, maybe we can make a better world where people aren't so hurtful towards each other. And also, it begs the question that, no, we are those people that maybe sometimes we do those bad things. We haven't done them yet. Maybe we're capable of doing them in the future. So it's good to know why bad things happen, because that might be us. We may be able to avoid adding to the hurt and pain in the world. So the title of this talk is just Why People Do Bad Things. Now, first of all, there's no such thing as evil in Buddhism. Now, that particular word, evil, it may sound sort of a good excuse, but instead in Buddhism, we usually have like stupidity rather than evil. People do bad things because of stupidity. In other words, it may seem like a good idea at the time, simply because one is a bit deluded. But if one looks upon it later on and thinks, gee, why did I do that? That's a stupid thing to do. But at the time, it seemed a good idea. And of course, one of the reasons why people get deluded, you know, is usually because under the influence of those substances, alcohol and drugs. And of course, I was been telling a lot of people recently, even some politicians, although I don't think this is a good idea to take back to their party and make it part of their political manifesto. You all know that we've been suffering from a big drought here in Western Australia. You just need to go and visit our monasteries in the bush to see how many trees have died. And so there's a great water shortage around this state. And so in order to address the water shortage, I always thought we should actually ban beer. Because if you drink beer, it just goes straight into the body and back into the loo after half an hour. It wastes so much water. So in order to preserve the water resources of our state, we should actually make beer illegal. But amazing, the politicians didn't think that was a good idea they could take to their electorate here in Australia. But maybe that's one of the reasons why Buddhists should not get involved in politics. But being more serious, there's a lot of hurt, a lot of violence does happen because of alcohol and drugs. And so why do people actually take those things? You know, a lot of times it's just the peer pressure. You know, the peer pressure which, you know, people say, oh, come and have a drink. Or just, you know, that other people are taking this stuff. You take some stuff too. It's going to be fun. And I still remember a time when I was teaching a retreat over in Safety Bay. And just in a space between the interviews, I was looking through the window. And it was a Catholic retreat center, and as I was looking through the window, I saw these two people, two maybe middle-aged men. They'd just gone to church for the Sunday service. And as they were shaking hands and saying goodbye to each other, they parted with this greeting. One of them said to the other, be good. And the other one said, no, that's no fun. And of course, I thought, hey, what's going on here? Why is being good got such a bad reputation in Australia? And when you really investigate, use wisdom rather than just following what other people do. Being good actually is fun. So when you say be good, yes, I'm going to enjoy myself this week. Because if you really think about it, if you're good, then you have a good time. So, you know, I'm a good time monk. Sometimes people say if you're a good time person, that means you go out drinking, carousing. But no, that really a good time. So one of the things why people do bad things is because of delusion. They think that doing those things is going to be fun and going to be enjoyable. I usually tell this story when I go off to house blessings. But I haven't told this story, I think, here for a long time. It was actually a story which happened in Sydney some years ago. I told this story once in Malaysia about 10, 15 years ago, and it was actually on the radio the next morning. Somebody was taking me off on a journey. They had the radio on. This fellow was saying it as a morning joke. So it's a funny story, but it's a true story. It actually happened in Sydney some years ago. A man was just finishing work and went to the office party, maybe on a Friday, and you know, obviously drank too much. And on the way home, you know, he decided to drive rather than take a taxi. You've got to be very careful, because if you drink drive, you're going to be in big trouble if you get caught. But, you know, he thought he'd take a chance. So he took a chance, and driving back home, there was a blitz. The police in New South Wales were stopping every car on the road, on a particular stretch of road, and actually checking them. And so he was caught in a road traffic trap. And you can't do a U-turn. Unfortunately, that there was one of the members here many years ago, that there was such a trap on the causeway, just in East Perth. And he had been drinking, and he had been, he knew he was over the limit, so actually he did a U-turn. There was a police car waiting in the bushes for him, and he got caught. Serves him right. But anyway, so if you do a U-turn, you get caught. I mean, that's an admission of guilt. So he had to wait in line to get tested. And when it got to his turn to get tested, he got out of his car, and the officer gave him this tube to breathe into. Can you please breathe into this tube, sir? And he took the tube, and at that very moment, there was a sound of a car crash, because it was like a road traffic hazard. Now, one car had been going slightly too fast and had rear-ended the car in front of him. And the police officer heard that crash and said, "Sir, it's more important that I check on this road accident than check your alcohol level." And he took the breathalyzer back before the man had blown into it. And the policeman said, "Get back in your car and go home." He'd literally become within a couple of seconds of being caught. That's how lucky he was. But there's such a thing as the law of karma. You don't get away with anything in this life. Because the following morning, he was woken up with somebody pressing the bell of his door, and they just wouldn't give up. And so he dragged himself out of bed with a hangover, and he answered the door in his pajamas, and there were two policemen standing outside his door. And of course, he wasn't driving. They can't do anything to him now. So he said, "What do you want?" with perfect confidence. And all the policemen wanted to do, they said, "Can we just look inside your garage?" Nothing in his garage. He wasn't a thief. There's no stolen goods or drugs there. So of course, he said. So he opened up his garage. And when he opened up his garage, he almost had a heart attack. Because in his garage, there was a police car. I think you've got the message. When they said, "Sir, get in your car and drive home," he got in the wrong car. Of course, they were missing a police car, and they had an extra car back on in the roadblock. That apparently happened. True story. I think he's still in jail. So that's one of the dangers there. So why do people do this bad? They think it's fun. It's much more fun not to take the alcohol on drugs. But why do people do that? You know, one of the things we don't think for ourselves, do we? We just follow other people. And we're influenced by other people. Now, that is one of the most important reasons why people do bad things. It's just under the influence of others. and not being associating with good people. And that's actually one of the reasons why it's great you come to places like this. I mean, I'm sure you know this is a good place. You know, the monks and the nuns, we know we're pretty harmless. You know, we don't encourage you to do terrible, bad things. So just coming here, and it associates with other good people. As a kid, you know, as a young man, going out, sort of, you know, I used to drink, but not get drunk. Well, maybe a couple of times, but that was, you know, when I was stupid. But I always remember that there were some pubs in London you can go, and there would always be a fight there every evening. And I wonder, why do people go there? Why do people go and, you know, have a fight? You know, some people like fighting. I can't imagine that. Why do you want to get bashed for? But people actually enjoy that sometimes. It's crazy to me. But anyway, if you associate with certain people, those are the sorts of things which happen. If you associate with other people, other things happen. And it reminds me of like a classic story from the Buddhist texts. I know that last week Ajahn Sujata was talking about some Jataka tales. These are like old stories, like animal stories, like fables from the time of the Buddha, which, you know, they would use in India just to illustrate points. And this was the story of an elephant. There's always an animal in these stories. And this was way before Walt Disney. Really, Walt Disney should pay royalties to Buddhism because we invented the animal stories. But anyway, back to my story, or rather the Buddha's story. There was an elephant, a really good elephant. Now, remember in those days, that was the main means of transport. You know, there was no cars, no bicycles, no motorbikes, even horses. They weren't. No, they had a few horses, but the main means of transport was on an elephant. So all the rich people had elephants, and especially if you were a king, you know, big elephant, that was like a Rolls Royce. You know, we can't really call it a Lamborghini because elephants don't go that fast, but, you know, it was very comfortable and get you to wherever you wanted to go. And so he had a nice elephant, and the elephant had been trained and was always very docile and would always behave. But in a matter of a couple of weeks, that elephant changed his character and became a very naughty, bad, grumpy, mean elephant, never sort of doing what it was supposed to do. And of course, the king thought there was something sick, so he sent the mechanic, who was an animal doctor, to try and fix up the elephant. And the doctor couldn't find anything wrong with the elephant. And so it's actually scratching his head. Why is it that this elephant just has changed its character? Before it was really nice and easygoing and good, and now it's really grumpy and awful and angry and just disobedient. What's wrong with that elephant? And of course, in this Jataka tale, there was a wise minister, and they always say that wise minister was a Buddha in his previous life. That's just standard, but you don't have to believe that. But anyway, it's a decent story anyway. And they sent this wise minister check it out. And so what he did, he just stayed with the elephant for a couple of days. And one night, he was sleeping next to the elephant, got woken up. There was a sound right behind the elephant stall. And he went to investigate, and it was a bunch of thieves, a gang of thieves were meeting there. And he realized they were meeting in the secret place behind the elephant stall every night, you know, to plan what they were going to do, where they were going to steal, who they were going to rob. And he realized why the elephant had changed his character. Even though the elephant just doesn't understand human language, still it picks up on the vibes of the people around him. And so all that a minister did, he told the king, the next evening they arrested all those thieves, and in his place, the minister arranged for Buddhist monks to go and, you know, talk to each other, to meditate and to chant, whatever they did, behind the elephant stall. And because now the elephant was picking up on the vibes of the monks, it meant that the elephant changed its character back into being very peaceful and docile and kind again. It was just a story of just how even animals can pick up on the vibes, the attitudes of the beings around them. So the moral of that story is this. If you've got a husband who's disobedient, who's grumpy and angry, just send him to our monastery for a few days and associate him with nice, peaceful and kind monks. It will change him. Money back guarantee. I can say that because you never pay any money anyway, so I've got nothing to lose. Or if you've got a wife who's always nagging you, giving you a hard time, send him to the nuns' monastery. But the important thing is, who we associate with really helps. And if you associate with bad people, evil people, or not evil people, but stupid people, you actually become stupid. That's actually a very interesting way. It's one of the reasons why it's really wonderful that actually people can associate with good people, can find times to go on retreat, can visit places, can just hang out. You don't need to ask questions. You don't need to meditate. Just to hang out with peaceful, kind people. You can visit any of our monasteries and you can see just how the animals pick up on that. And just even today, just leaving my room to come, you know, to get in the car to come here this evening, there's a couple of kangaroos on the path, you know, in Bodhinyana Monastery. They wouldn't get out of the way. I had to get out of their way and just do the detour. So they're very disobedient, disrespectful, but we love them very much. Because they're totally, they know that, no, we won't harm them. They sort of get the vibes of the monks, and so they're relaxed and they're peaceful. And you know, it's kind of wonderful to be around animals when they don't really harm you and they feel relaxed in your presence. They pick up on the vibe. So the reason why people are evil and bad, or even why snakes bite or dogs bite, is because they pick up on the on what's around them. So if you can associate with good people, with kind people, then of course that is one great way of overcoming the badness in this world. And a lot of times badness comes because people have been associating with other bad people. You know, people get into drink or drugs because they associate with other people who are doing the same thing. So a lot of the badness in the world is just like association, because we get into peer pressure. Now, of course, that peer pressure is something we should resist anyway. We should make up our own decisions in life and not just follow other people. One of our monks, he was brought up on a farm over in Mandijong. I think he's over in Kuching in East Malaysia now. But he told me when he was brought up on a farm, his father was, you know, gave him jobs to do around the farm. And one day, you know, he went to try and collect the sheep, and he found these sheep had formed a circle, a perfect circle around this big thicket of bushes. And they were going around and around and around, because sheep always follow the one in front of them, which is okay if they're in a line, but if they're in a circle, it becomes endless. And he didn't know how long they'd been walking around in a circle, but he just needed, obviously, to pull one out of the line, and it would break that sort of that habitual pattern. But if he hadn't have gone out there, they'd have probably still, you know, walking around in that circle today if they hadn't all died. And he said, that's the nature of sheep, to follow each other. And he asked you, is that your nature, to follow each other? Because sometimes, good and bad, why do we do good things? Why do we do bad things? Yes, peer pressure is an influence, but it's an influence which we can resist. We don't have to follow others. We can think for ourselves. We can know, you know, what is good and what is bad. And a lot of times it's because people are weak-minded. They don't stand up for what they know is right. But that's one of the reasons why sort of there is bad things happen in this world. You know, they need to sort of be a bit more challenging, even like rebellious. I know that sometimes people always say that religion is a bit conservative, but you know, all religions started off as being rebellious. You know, all religions did that. It's standing up against things which they knew were wrong in this world. You know, and sometimes they got crucified, but sometimes they got sort of demeaned, they got shouted at or whatever. But you know, there's something about sort of religion which should always be challenging and not just comforting. Now, you know, in other words, getting you to grow and think for yourselves, and arguing and debating and pushing things forward, not just being another sheep. Because if you are sheep, we just get just more, just, well, badness can actually grow. There's an old saying, if you want to write these sayings down or put them on calendars or write them on a piece of paper and put them in your office, it is a saying I heard a long time ago, where everybody thinks the same, no one thinks at all. Where everybody thinks the same, no one thinks at all. That's a problem with the peer pressure. And I think that's one of the great reasons why people do bad things. But going deeper into this, another reason why people do bad things, I found this out, just I can see the inclinations in my own mind sometimes, my own character. One of the reasons people do bad things these days is people are just so tired. Have you ever got up in the morning and you haven't had a good night's sleep and you say you're grumpy? Until you've had your first cup of coffee, you're impossible to live with. Have you ever noticed just that tiredness, just how that brings out the negativity in human beings? And if that negativity grows and grows and grows, it means that that negativity gets worse and worse and worse, and we just grow into bad people. Now, one of the reasons why there is bad people in this world, I think anyway, is actually because we work too hard. We're just too tired. We don't give ourselves enough rest and enough space. So look, that's actually, I got that from, who was it? I think it was this philosopher. I did write this out in my book. It was a French philosopher about 1600, I'll probably remember his name in a few minutes, who said that all the evils of man, because he was a Christian, all the evils of man, and he meant women at the same time, but you know, it was 1600 and something, so, you know, all the evils of mankind, humankind, all come from them not knowing how to sit still. It was Laplace. He was also a mathematician. All the troubles of human beings come from them not knowing how to sit still. And I thought that's a very profound saying. It's because we don't sit still enough. We don't have time to rest. We don't have time to consider. We just go on autopilot with the negativity of a tired, worn-out body and worn-out mind. And that gives us a sense of grumpiness and negativity. We can do awful bad things to each other. So just give yourself a few moments of peace if you want to be a good person. Now, why is it that the monks and the nuns, why is it we do so much meditation? Why is it these people who sort of are supposed to live peaceful, easy lives, why is it they do have a natural goodness? And why is it these high flyers who work so hard, you know, 19, 20 hours a day, become pains in the neck for other people? Why is that? You obviously can understand why. That tiredness of human beings, of human society, engenders negativity, which can engender sort of the worst of badness. So I think that the world will become a better place if we would work less hours and rest more. That's a challenging sort of statement, but maybe you can do a little bit less. You may not get as much money. Your house may not be as clean and tidy, but you will be a happier, more peaceful, less grumpy person. And isn't that a wonderful thing to have? So that's why, as Buddhist monks, we try and encourage people to take time out. Why we encourage people to do with less, so you can have more time and there'll be less anger in this world. Because what happens when you do get tired? That negativity turns into what we call frustration. You know, you want to sort of control the environment, control this world. It just, why can't people do the right thing? Why can't it be like this? You know the control freak mentality. You know, each one of you is a control freak in your own way, big ones or small ones or medium ones. But you know what happens when you get frustrated? When we control, we'll always come across, sooner or later, a brick wall. The world does not go the way it should go. You don't get what you want in this world. Things always go wrong. I spent the last couple of weeks, you know, playing. For me, monk playing is building. That's my little entertainment. And at last, I managed, because of the Jhana Grove Retreat Center, to be able to put on the roof of the teacher's cottage we're building over there. So I've been having great fun, sort of, you know, being a boy again. Just being a young man. Get on top of the ladders, getting all wet, getting all muddy, cutting my fingers. I always said that every building in Bodhinyana Monastery, at least the ones I've done, have been blessed with my own blood, because I was not such a good builder. Sometimes you bang your finger with the hammer, you cut yourself on the steel. Much blood has been shed for Bodhinyana Monastery. So I just did that today. I've got a Band-Aid on here somewhere. So, but I enjoy that. It's a bit of fun and lots of good exercise for doing that. But you know what happens if you do any building? You order the things, but they don't come as you expected. They got the wrong lengths. They change the measurements. They don't actually do what it's supposed to do. And it's so easy to get angry and say, it shouldn't be like that. But that's if you're a control freak. And many times before when I was building, you just get very angry and upset at the sort of the designers. He designed most of our buildings over there, Dennis. or the suppliers or something. The bricks aren't square. You know, the metal is bent or whatever else it is. But, you know, you just get angry and upset and that doesn't really help you. And it makes you angry at your other monks afterwards. You take it out on them. You take it out on your wife, your husband, if you're married. Is that really just the way? That is evil. That's bad happening. And it all comes because of frustration. And so these days, you know, you don't get into frustration anymore. Instead of getting, because I know where frustration will lead. I try and control the world, say the world should be like this, all the building materials should be straight and the bricks should be square. But you realize that's not the real world. The real world is imperfect. I can't control it. So instead of trying to control it, you just make it work. In other words, you adapt. So instead of controlling, we adapt. In other words, we look at new ways of doing things, a different way of solving the problem. And that's actually why I like building, because I'm not going to get lots of problems, and it's just like doing a Sudoku puzzle. You know, how am I going to make this work when it's, you know, it's not exactly as it says in the plans? So you do those things, and you adapt, and then you can always find a way of solving the problems. But you don't go into control, because if you control, you go in this wall of frustration. The world doesn't go the way it should do. Husbands are not what they should be. Wives are not what I married them for. No, that's not what the bargain said when I married her. She said she'd love me forever. She'd do this and do that. And now she doesn't keep the contract or whatever. Neither does he. Look, husbands are husbands. Wives are wives. That's what they're like. And I kept on telling you that. So just don't think that there's something wrong with your model. That's what they're all like. So don't think you're going to get rid of this one to get a better model. You change the person, yeah, a different chassis, but inside the engine is the same. That's a great teaching of life. So instead, because if you get control, the next thing you get frustration. After frustration, that's where you get anger from. You get so tired, so frustrated. You get this incredible anger. And that anger is such a bad force. It's from anger that people do stupid things. You know, they get to do stupid things like hurting each other, beating each other up, sort of even killing each other, you know, road rage. You know, have you ever seen these examples of road rage? That famous example, which I don't know what the last time I told here, apparently it was in New York. I don't know what caused this road rage, but this one driver was very upset. The other driver was chasing him through the streets of New York. And managed to catch him at a red light. The two cars had to stop at the traffic light. And the angry driver got out of his car at the stops, at the traffic junction, and started beating on the window of the other car, trying to get in. And of course, that driver inside the car was terrified. And if that glass had broken, if the, you know, the angry driver had got in there, he'd be in big trouble. But fortunately, the lights changed in time. So the driver inside the car sped off. But what happened to the driver who was trying to break in was actually a good illustration of the law of karma, why you should never get road rage, why you should never get angry. Because when he jumped out of his car to try and get into his enemy's car, he left the door open with the keys in the ignition and the engine running. And you don't do that in New York. Because when he turned around to get in his car, it always sped off. Some street kid had stolen his car. And there he was, standing in the intersection with no car. Because when you're angry, you do stupid things. You don't really know what you're doing. So that's why anger always gets bad karma, bad results. You don't know what you're doing. So anyway, when you get angry, you can do really mean things. And where's that coming from? The frustration. And that's why people become bad people. They just get so angry. And they're trying to make the world a better place, but instead of making the world a better place by getting rid of the pests in your life, that never works. You've already gone too far. It's this whole cycle coming from controlling to frustration to anger and then violence, just because of desire, wanting to change the world, wanting to change your partner, wanting to change the government, wanting to change all these things. That is not the wise way. Instead of trying to change the system, you try and change yourself instead. Change your attitude towards things. Stop getting so frustrated by stop trying to control so much. And learn to actually to be with this world rather than always to try and make it a different world. You know, understand the nature of, you know, wives and husbands, governments, the nature of cars and driving. There'll always be people who sort of do the wrong thing and cut in front of you. That's just nature. So don't fight it. You're fighting a battle you will never win, and are fighting a battle which will make you a bad person. It doesn't win that way. No one wins. So a lot of bad people have gone on this whole trajectory of, you know, being control freak, fighting, and eventually getting into this terrible frustration which causes them so much anger they get quite violent and very mean. That's not a way to go. That's some of the reasons why bad things happen. And I mention this so that when you understand why bad things happen, why people do bad things, you can understand, you know, where they're coming from and also how you should avoid these things. And I go back to that tiredness business because, again, if you could only give people a break, you know, time off, retreats or whatever, give them more holidays. And by a holiday, well, you know, I mean just a real holiday where you can just rest instead of doing more work. You know, that's what most people's holidays are. You know, I couldn't believe once when I saw this advertisement for Club Mediterranean. And just every hour of the day is filled up with things to do. You know, you never have any rest at all. And you get up in the morning, there's breakfast, and then snorkeling, and then abseiling, and then bungee jumping, and in the evening, a sort of a big party where you just dance and get tired until midnight, and then you get up and do all the same thing again. It wears you out. It's supposed to be a holiday. Come and relax, for goodness sake. So that's why the real Club Med, for the wise people, a few 60 lucky people, is happening at Jhana Grove. No, Club Med, Jhana Grove, that's Club Meditation, not Club Mediterranean. And that's really good. You don't have to put, you know, it's very cheap, much cheaper than Club Mediterranean. And you actually can really relax there. Quite a few people have done that, you know. They've had their holidays and they've gone to the monastery, you know, Dhammasara Nuns Monastery or Bodhinyan Monastery or the Jhana Grove Retreat Center. They've gone there for their holidays. So when they go back to work, they say, oh, where do you go for the holidays? Do you go to sort of Bali or you go to Thailand or Phuket? Or where do you go for your holidays? And he said, oh, I went to monastery for holidays. What? You know, went to a monastery for your holidays? That's stupid. But he said, look, it costs nothing and I'm so relaxed and so peaceful. Really, we should actually have that in a brochure. Get that in the weekend Australian travel section. Monastery. Very cheap, very effective. I shouldn't say that because we get full. But you can see the advantage of that because when you really rest, you become a much better person afterwards. You're not bad anymore when you're resting. So please, to lessen the badness in this world, please have more rest. And also less, you know, desire, less controlling. And of course, what I'm getting at now is a basic teaching in Buddhism, what they call the three defilements of the mind. Now, why a person does bad things, it's either greed, hatred, or delusion. Now, greed, desiring, and wanting. And a lot of times, it's always delusion is there as well. We do bad things because we want. But wanting is not such a bad thing, as long as we want the right thing, as long as it's not deluded wanting. It's because it's deluded wanting. That's the reason. This is why people do stupid and bad things. So if it's wise wanting, so what do you really want in life? I gave a talk on this some time ago. What do people really, really want? And if you can identify what you really, really, really want, you'll never be a bad person anymore. Because what people really, really, really want is they want to be respected. They want to have a sense of peace in their life and contentment. you know, you don't need that much for those qualities. In fact, there's so many happy people who don't have big houses and big cars and lots of money in the bank. You don't need those things. You don't need to have your footy team always winning. It's actually quite fortunate to understand that, living here in Western Australia. You don't need all these things to be happy and be content and be peaceful. So when you understand what you really, really want, then the wanting can be good wanting. And I just want people to be happy. You just want to have a nice, easy, peaceful life for yourself and for your kids. Keep your wants as wise wants. And then if you have wise wanting, then it never leads to badness at all. It leads to just beautiful, good things in this world. But it's also the delusion of thinking that somehow what you want is separate from everybody else in the world, which is another cause of the badness. It's what we call like selfishness, a deluded sense of it's just you in this world and nobody else. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of badness, because there's some people are just so self-centered, they haven't got this empathy for anybody else. And by self-centered, I mean each one of us is to a certain amount self-centered. By the self, it may be just not your own being. It may be just your family. It's yourself. That's who you identify with. And you protect your family against all others. Or it can be your gender. It can be your nation. It can be your religion. It can be your species. When we identify with one group which is apart from other groups, that can be a cause of delusion which can create badness in the world. It's one of the reasons why we just think of us or my group and that's against all others. We haven't got the empathy for the other. And you can see that's one of the reasons why there was that terrible event of those cows, you know, in Indonesia being maltreated. So why does a bad thing like, why can that actually happen? Of course, I never saw that because I don't watch TV, but people talked to me about it. I think last weekend they described it to me, what was happening there. And it's apparently really, really gross, and many people were just sickened to what they saw. But the question comes, how can people do that to cows? And obviously the answer is those aren't beings. They're not the same as us. They're just like automatons, or they've got no soul, or they're not real. And it's only when we make that distinction between me and them that we can justify doing bad things. And of course, people who saw that on the TV, there's a huge amount of empathy there. There was something very recognizable in a cow's suffering which we could recognize in ourselves. And that is why it was so offensive. We just thought that was so bad thing to do. You know that some cultures, they make a difference there. That, you know, the cows, they're not us. They got no soul. So they're just on earth to be eaten, that's all. It's only when we get that empathy and that sort of connection with another being that we can have a sense of compassion and kindness. There's one story which I wrote about in The Opening Door of Your Heart, which was a brilliant story, because when I used to go teaching every week at Karna Prison Farm, there was one guy came up to me. I arrived early. He wanted to see me, and this was before the session of meditation I used to teach. And when this guy came up to me and said he wanted to talk to me, and this guy was huge. You know, he was like this big gorilla, you know, full of scars all over his face. And look, I stereotyped, because when that guy came in, I said, "You've got the wrong place. I'm teaching meditation." He said, "No, I want to meditate." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Look, this is what happened to me the previous week." And, you know, straight away I picked up from his accent, he was from Northern Ireland. You know how that was, how very violent place up until recently. And this guy was Northern Ireland. He said he was from Belfast. And to give me sort of the background, he said that he was first stabbed when he was 7 years of age. That was his first stabbing. And of course, many since. And he said that he was in this school in Belfast, a really sort of poor school, and some bully had come up to him to ask for the money he had for his lunch. And he said no. And the bully said, "Give me your money." He said no. And the bully pulled out a knife. "If you don't give me your money, I'll stab you." And the seven-year-old thought, no one does that. So he said no a third time. And this boy plunged a knife into his arm. 7 years of age and being stabbed at school. And the kid, this boy, he just ran out of the schoolyard because his house was just round the corner, and ran into the kitchen. His father, unemployed, was there. He said, Daddy, Daddy, I've been stabbed. There was blood running down his arm. Daddy, I've been stabbed. And his father looked at the wound. He didn't dress it or sponge up the blood. He just opened the kitchen drawer, took out another knife, gave it to his son and said, stab the boy back. And he said, that's how I've been brought up. Okay, so you can understand the influence of other people, how that does make you bad from the time of seven. He said he'd been in and out of jails in Europe, now he managed to get to Australia. And he confessed to me that he had murdered. He'd killed people. But because he was so strong and tough, you could see the scars on him, he was a survivor. But he said when he went to this prison farm, just by our monastery, it was a farm. And they had cows and sheep and chickens there. And they also have a slaughterhouse there where they kill all the meat, which is providing steaks and sausages and whatever to all the prison population in West Australia. So it saves money and it's supposed to teach these prisoners a trade. So being a violent man, he soon got his job in the slaughterhouse, the abattoir. And soon he said he had to fight for the job of the slaughterer, the guy who actually killed the cows. So that's a job in those days you had to fight for, you know, physically. But he was such a tough guy, he got there as a slaughterer. And he said, all these people just wading around in blood all day, just a great therapy for violent criminals. Stupid. But anyway, that's not the point of the story. He was the head executioner there. And he told me that it was done reasonably humanely, but was it really humane? Listen to what happened next. He said that whether it was cows or sheep or whatever, or pigs, they would come into this slaughterhouse and there'd be these wide rails, stainless steel, and they'd channel the animals into the, you know, so they just go one by one. And he'd be on a platform with an electric stun gun. He said the first one was just to stun the animal, and the second, you know, he could actually aim properly and kill it. And he'd been doing this, you know, for many, many months. And he said this particular day, they needed cows, beef. And so they were slaughtering a number of cows. And all these cows would come in. And he said that the cows, even though this was stunning and before they were executed, it was still the cows were moaning, trying to escape if they possibly could. There's I've never done this, never seen it, but there's a certain cry that they do when they're in trouble. So they knew exactly what was going to happen to them. Just like, you know, you would do if you were about to be executed. So they saw the ones in front of them, they could smell the blood, they knew what was going to happen. So they'd all try and escape. They'd try and sort of wriggle away. So that's why he said the first shot, he could never aim that properly, because they were trying to escape. But he said that what changed his life, he said he'd been doing this for months, and this one cow came in without making any sound, without moaning, and came in without struggling, without trying to escape. Just walked in, you know, between those railings, positioned itself almost like voluntarily, head down, positioned itself, and then looked up at the prisoner. And he said, he swore at me. He said, this is God's own, please excuse me, effing truth, he said. That cow was actually just standing there, eyeballing me. And he said, I'd never seen this before. And he said that it was so strange, he just couldn't pull the trigger. He didn't know how many seconds passed by. He couldn't take his eyes away from the eyes of this one cow, silently just staring at him. And he said the next strange thing which happened, very weird. You know how big a cow's eyes are? He said in one of those eyes, above the lower lid, he noticed there was liquid accumulating. Until that water got so much that the lid could not hold it anymore, and it trickled down the cheek of the cow. He never seen anything like that before, until he noticed the same was happening in the other eye. Tears were forming until it was so much that that too trickled over the eyelid and fell down the other eye, the cheek of the cow. The cow was crying. And that broke this violent man. Something inside of him snapped. And he threw down that gun. And he said to the officers, "So you can do whatever you want to me, but that cow ain't dying." He's a big guy. Now this was a person who'd murdered people. And now he saw in the crying cow a connection, could empathize. And see what was in that cow was in him. He could no more kill that cow than he could kill himself. A bad man. And you must call him a bad man by, you know, modern sort of usage. Although there's no such thing as a bad man, just a man who does bad things. But that person who was in prison for many violent crimes changed in that moment. When he came up to see me, he said, I'm a vegetarian now. He couldn't do anything else. It was the story of the cow that cried. I checked that with the other prisoners there. They said it was absolutely true. It's not an exaggeration. They could see that empathy, which was lost in that person from probably the time he was 7, now was restored. One of the reasons why we do bad things, or people do bad things, they haven't got that empathy. They can't relate to another person. It may be that it's not my religion, so the other people don't count. The infidels are evil, they're bad, so who cares whether they get killed? The other gender doesn't really matter. So the people who have different sexual orientation than me, you know, you may be sort of a sort of heterosexual. You think homosexuals, they're not the same as us, they're evil, they're bad. There's no empathy there. If you have empathy with another person, you feel what they feel. You realize, what's that saying? They're just the same as us. That us gets bigger and bigger. The whole world, all human beings, they're just the same as us. The cows and the sheep, they're just the same as us. The kangaroo and the birds, they're just the same as us. The more you can widen that just the same as us field, the more empathy there is, and the less chance there is of being bad. And the indigenous community in Australia, the earth, the land in which we sit and walk, is just the same as us. They've got such empathy and such connection just with hills and streams and fields and bushes, such empathy that they can no more sort of kill the land than a vegetarian can kill a cow. There's an empathy there. Why do people do bad things to the planet Earth? Because we think it's ours to control. Because we haven't got that empathy. It hasn't been developed. In the same way that sort of a violent person can have no empathy for his enemy. They're not the same as us. Therefore, I can kill them, slaughter them, whatever. So a lot of badness comes from that lack of empathy. And I think the journey of human life, the journey of spirituality, is developing more and more empathy, widening that field of people who you can relate to as just the same as me. That's what we do with interfaith meetings, the different religions. Yes, sort of the Muslims, they might dress different than the Buddhists. Yes, the Christians may sort of chant and do ceremonies which are in a different sort of form than the sort of the Jews. But look, if you associate with people, after a while, you come to the conclusion, they're just the same as me. And that means no way can I harm a person who's just the same as me. I can't hurt them. I'll stand up for them. I'll be their friend. I'll be their protector when they're just the same as me. They're family. You're my family. Anyone who listens to this is my family. The kangaroos in Bowdoin Island Monastery are the family. The parrots and the kookaburras, they're the family. So when you understand that, where can there be any bad coming? So I think for empathy, or rather the lack of empathy, is one of the reasons for the bad things happening in this world. Now, I'm always running out of time and I want to sort of sum up now. It could go on a bit longer, but it's giving you an indication of where badness comes from. And of course, it's not just answering the question, why do people do bad things? It does answer that question, but once we find the reasons, it gives us an opportunity to make those bad things not happen again. So that we can make a much, much, much better world. And of course, that's the whole reason why we're here, to try and make a better world. But of course, the one bad thing which I haven't mentioned yet is Ajahn Brahm's bad jokes. And it's not my fault even, because I was just associated with my father, who would also say bad jokes. And I wanted, because it's a talk on bad things, I wanted to end with a bad joke. So today... This evening's bad joke. I've got a few. Which one is the worst one? Which I could tell you. Okay, it's the guy who went to see his doctor, and the doctor said, "Well, you know, you really need an operation. This is dangerous for your health. We can schedule you in for 3 months." Said the doctor, and the man said, "3 months' time? I can't wait that long. I might be dead in 3 months." And the doctor said, "Oh, don't worry, just get your wife to ring my secretary, we'll cancel the appointment." So that's modern. Any doctor here should be embarrassed, because that's so true. But anyway, that was a bad joke. And it's not really a bad joke, it's just good fun. So to sum up, the badness in this world, you can understand where it comes from now. And when we understand where it comes from, we can actually sometimes see if we can actually solve the problem. Remember some of the things I said. Give yourself more rest. Don't get so tired, because tiredness in life is a cause for badness. Empathize with more people. And don't just restrict your circle just to the people you know, the same color, the same gender, the same religion, the same sexual orientation or whatever, or the same species. And get empathy, and you realize these people, these beings, are just the same as me. And also associate with good, wise people. And if you know anyone who is a bad person, see if you can get them to associate with good people. Get them to sort of spend more time by themselves, if at all possible, to have some rest. And now, don't want things which are not really worthwhile. Want the things which are really important in life. So the desire is a wise desire. You don't have ill will. And of course, your delusion is overcome with some wisdom. Unfortunately, that just scratched the surface of this talk, but at least it gives you something to work on. So thank you for listening. Why people do bad things.